Hello, everybody. This is Radio Johnny, and this week's Recovery Radio Show is a pretty special one, at least for me and some of the folks that are in the recovery community around here. It was recorded on New Year's Eve of 2021-2022 when we had a New Year, sober New Year celebration, and because of COVID, we were able to recruit three speakers who would otherwise not be able to be a part of it for reasons you'll find out later, to speak to us via Zoom and tell their stories, share their experience, strength, and hope for continued recovery. The last speaker is a woman named Trish, who just recently passed away, and her liver cancer finally took her, that she talks about in the thing. So this is, kind of touches my heart a little bit. I've known Trish for a lot of years. I have recorded her story in full and played it on this station at least a couple of times. And it's not only heartwarming, but eye-opening. And, I hope you all enjoy it as much as I enjoyed hearing it and talking with Trish over the years and years. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this Recovery Radio special event.
Sent to meetings hypnotized, overexposed, commercialized, and only with care.
And then to that end, do y'all want introductions or you just want to introduce yourself? What do you want? Okay. Well, Max is up first. And Max is an awesome human with a mohawk coming to us from Colfax. And that's what I got for y'all. Enjoy.
Thanks, Bree, and thanks for the opportunity to be of service this evening. My name is Max. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And if I don't set this timer right now, I will use up all the time because that's the size of my ego. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm not cured of alcoholism. The book tells me that I can recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that was brought about by not only my alcoholism, but my ego. That's my main flaw, and it's the flaw I will continue to fight till my dying day, because sometimes I think I'm smarter than God, and God has no problem proving me wrong over and over and over again. Sooner or later, I'll catch the hint. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to talk about that maintenance of that spiritual condition which allows me to enjoy when adversity strikes. Now, I'm going to say that again. When I first got to sobriety, I thought getting sober meant everything was going to be peaches and cream and puppies for the rest of my life, because I had so many problems and no way to deal with them that I thought the steps were going to bless me with the whole shebang, the cars, the house, the riches, the fame, the whole shebang. And so I set about trying to do that. In sobriety, I managed to attain a master's degree. I'm a third grade dropout, so that was a pretty big deal for me. And I overcame a lot of mostly my history and my past. I used the steps as they were taught to me by a lot of really great men, some of which I was blessed enough to call sponsor. They showed me how to work the first 9 steps into my daily life, because the first 3 steps were just thinking about it. The next 6 steps were figuring out doing it. And the last 3 are what I'm going to talk about, because in my book, it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Now, I didn't understand what understanding was when it came to other people. I certainly did not know what effective was. I knew how I could make things happen, but those usually weren't good things for me or anybody else. But you guys taught me these steps. And at first it was kind of rough, because when you quit drinking, you feel better. You feel happy better. You feel sad better. You feel everything better than you've ever felt it before. And for me, that was doubly true. But when I thought that I had it all figured out and I got that fancy master's degree and I set out to try and make something of the life that I thought God wanted me to have, with the big cars and the big house and the 3.75 children and the 4.22 pets or whatever the hell it is. I was struck down by a neurological disability that made it impossible for me to do even the most basic things. I had trouble socializing with my fellows in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I stopped going to meetings. I had trouble focusing on anything that was outside of being sick. And I got pretty dark. I didn't drink. And the only reason I didn't drink is because I didn't want to have to come back into those rooms and tell one of you guys that I needed to get a new 24-hour chip. My pride was too scared to do that. So when they tell you that God removes the defects that are going to be not beneficial, well, that character defect was still beneficial to me, which is why I still had it. Because if it wasn't for my ego, I might have drank. And with the neurological stuff that was going on, a drink might have killed me. Just blank. No drunk, no nothing, just short circuit my brain, and I'd be done. But I got pretty dark, and life seemed pretty bleak when they told me I'd never work again. And it wasn't for a couple of years of being that black, dark place that I had a coming to God moment, and my significant other asked me to call my sponsor because she was scared for my safety. And I called my sponsor, and I alternated between crying at him and screaming at him for a few minutes. And he just asked me the simplest question: what did you do before that you're not doing now? And the answer was, I wasn't tied into the fellowship anymore. And I'd heard it in plenty of meetings. You know, I stopped going to meetings, and then things got dark, and then I went back out. And I wasn't back out yet, but I was pretty darn close to finding a reason to not have to be here anymore. But as I mentioned earlier, because this isn't a go for me kind of rant, God's plan was so much better than mine. When I got back into being of service to others, when I started trying to go to as many meetings as I could handle, when I started trying to continue to practice these principles in all my affairs, everything changed. I was granted a lot of material help, so I didn't have to worry about how to pay my bills, and I could be present for the people in my life. And then the people in my life that I could be present for started to expand. Because I'd gotten sick, people, my ex-wife and a couple of mothers of my children, got mail that said, hey, you probably should check out what's going on, because this guy's pretty sick and he pays your child support. Which then got me back in touch with my kids. And none of that would have happened if I wouldn't have just turned that bend and realized that the steps are what kept me going good in the first place. It wasn't my plans or my designs. And today I have to wrap a silver lining around every cloud that comes my way, because if I don't, God will. And they hurt a lot more when the silver clouds drop on your head because you didn't see them. You know, a perfect example is this year I had a big trip planned for my family so I could take my daughter out and show her the coast that she'd never seen before. And God decided that the weather was going to stop that from happening, which in turn led to me ending up having a marvelous family dinner with four of my kids, one of which we'd never even been face to face in the same room before, because God's plans are better than mine. Every single time in sobriety that I have second-guessed something moving out of my way that I thought was meant for me, a larger blessing has happened. Okay. And it says right here, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. I consider myself to be a rather smart person, but I have no problems admitting that I was outsmarted by a liquid. A bottle of booze kept me locked down for most of my life. And I hopefully will never have to suffer that incomprehensible demoralization from alcohol or anything else for the rest of my life. And I do that by wrapping silver linings around clouds, by applying the steps you guys have taught me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to give every single lesson in my life the opportunity to be a miracle in my life if I choose to learn it. So that's really all I've got. I know it wasn't 20 minutes, but I'd rather cut it short than go long, because I really love the people that are coming up to share. So I want to thank you guys for another 24 hours of my sobriety. Whether you're going to let me have it or not, it's mine. I earned it. And hopefully my higher power will let me wake up again tomorrow so I can try and earn another one, because I desperately love this program and I desperately love you people. Thank you for my sobriety.
Next up, Gino.
My name's Gino. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here's a Max story. He did not look like he looked tonight when I first met him. He was nowhere near as calm as he is tonight either. And, that's going to bring me to kind of the topic that I chose. I'll read a couple of things. Max was nice enough to point out where this passage was the other night. It's on the bottom of page 152 of There Is a Vision for You. It talks about, a substitute for that life that we used to lead. There is a substitute, and is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. And further on down there, it says, you're going to meet these new friends in your own community. And I'll skip a couple of sentences. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder on your common journey. I met Max shortly after he got sober, which was 2010, 2011, or somewhere around there. I forgot to mention that I used to live and work up in your area, and I've been in that room that you folks are in quite a number of times when I could get there. I only lived about an hour away and had to cross a dam to get over to where you folks are. And it's great to see a couple of people that I remember tonight. You know, when I met Max way back then, it's been 10 years or more now. And, it seems kind of crazy, because Max is one of those people that was like me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. A little thing that I forgot to mention, and I don't have it on the bottom like Max does. My sobriety date is May the 7th of 1987. You know, I got sober down in Southern California, and there was a big Alano club there. And the folks there were almost at the point of taking bets how long I would stay sober. Because I wasn't one of those people that, how should I say this? I was relieved of the obsession to drink immediately following the very first meeting that I went to. But I wasn't quite sure about this program and you people in it. You know, I like so many of us, I didn't trust people. Why would I trust a bunch of people I didn't even know? But I got to see that from listening to their stories and hanging out at the Alano Club and going to meetings and all that, that's that fellowship thing that I read about. Max mentioned all those steps. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The fellowship is a different thing. I'm going to read another thing there that talks about that fellowship. We commenced to make many fast friends and fellowship. And a fellowship has grown up among us, of which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part of. And then down at the bottom of that paragraph, this is on page 15, it says, we meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. It's always been my understanding, and it was kind of taught to me by the folks that I got sober with, one of whom at that very first meeting that I went to had been sober longer than I'd been alive. Yeah, and it's like, okay, sure, okay, go ahead and tell me more stuff. Because how do you stay sober longer than I've been alive? And I was 32 at the time. But it was taught to me that the reason that we have meetings is so, as I pointed out there, so that newcomers can find what we have. It's all well and good that a guy like me with 35 some odd years of sobriety can go to a meeting and hang out with a bunch of folks. What good does it do if we're not doing what that 12th step suggests and carrying this message to other alcoholics? To me, that's the whole purpose of these meetings. I'm really glad that there was some people here that are relatively new in the program. I wish you all the best. I wish you everything that I have. Bree asked me about this a couple of weeks back and asked if I had a topic that I'd like to speak on or anything. And I really wasn't sure. And then I got to thinking about this fellowship thing. And that one of those first readings there that I mentioned lifelong friends, And I am still in touch with a woman who was my very first AA girlfriend. And this is not the way things went in the past, because I think I was about 18 months sober and she was about 15 months sober or so. And we've been going out for a little while. And I picked up the phone one morning and it was Cindy, and she says, "We need to talk." I've heard that before. And my first thought, 18 months sober, was, "You need to talk. I need to go to the bar." And, you know, fortunately I didn't, because it was early enough in the morning. And like I said, that Alano Club had like 3 meetings a day, and maybe sometimes some days 4 or 5. So I went to a meeting instead. I'm still in touch with that lady. I texted her, got pictures of her kids. Now, you have to understand, this gal's a real alcoholic like I was. She showed up at that Alano Club with a black plastic bag of everything she owned, slept in a car out back that was parked out there. And now she's a successful person. And at the time, I'm not sure if she knew at the time or not, but it turns out she was pregnant at the time, had a 1-year-old kid who had been taken away from her. Shortly after coming to the program and going through a recovery deal, she got those kids back. And now she's sending me pictures of their kids. I don't know where you folks came from. I do know where some of you came from. Okay. Max likes this because I say it all the time. You cannot get here from there. I had too many friends didn't make it to 32. How did I manage to make it to 32? I felt completely blessed when I found this program that I actually got here before they put me in a box and buried me, because I expected that to happen before I reached 30. I'm lucky that it didn't, because now I get the blessings of all this. As I said, I met Max over 10 years ago. I have other people in this wonderful thing right here that I still talk to, sometimes frequently, that I've known. There's a guy there that I texted today that was at that very first meeting that I attended. You know, all those folks that I grew up with outside of siblings and a couple of really close friends. I'm not in touch with any of them folks that I hung out in the bar with. I don't have a clue where they went. I've got lifelong friends here in Alcoholics Anonymous, because we have a common thing, as it talks about that lifeboat deal. There's a guy on here, it says Barry S. I've known him all my life. One day, I think I was a couple of years sober, maybe 3. He calls me up, says, "I think I need one of them books that you have for those meetings that you go to." He's my brother. So he's sober like 32 years or something now. Somehow we both managed to make it well past our graybeard age. You know, this is a wonderful program. I see Paul over there in the corner, and Gary, and I see Dave in the back, and I saw Tig walk by a little while ago. Mary Beth was here. You know, there's people that I met in 2010 and 2011 when I first moved up to that part of the country to go to work. And I have a sneaky suspicion that if I needed to get in touch with them, Max probably has their phone numbers, I could probably call them and ask them for help. That woman that I talked about, my friend Tim, who was at the very first meeting, if I called them and asked for help, they would give it. If they called me and asked for help, I would do everything in the world that I could to help those folks out right now. Because like I said, that lifeboat thing, yeah, I don't want to see anybody go back over the side. I'm in it now. They're in it now. I'd like to see them stay until we reach that final shore, whatever you want to call it. Now, there's a lot of things going on in Alcoholics Anonymous that allowed me to stay. I don't know how I walked into that very first meeting, and the things that I heard that allowed me to stay were a God of your own understanding. That had never happened to me in my life before. It had always been God as we understand him, and you better listen to us and do it our way. You know, they told me that these were suggestions. Oh, okay. You mean I don't have to follow any rules? You might be able to tell by looking at me that authority and I don't get along real well. So they just suggested that I do these things. Well, I followed those suggestions and I'm still here. To me, it's an amazing thing. It's absolutely amazing. How does a guy like me, who in the last days of my drinking could barely make it a couple of hours without a drink, if I struggled at it, you know, I prayed for those breaks at work when I could go out to the car and get a can of warm beer if I had to. How does a guy like that end up? Oh, I talked about the job there. Until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a series of jobs and I was always looking for another one. It seemed like when I went up there to where you folks are and went to work, I retired from that job. I retired from a career. That does not happen to me. And the only way it happened to me was through this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't do it by myself. I can't say that I haven't, but I've rarely met an alcoholic of my type that can stay sober by themselves and accomplish what's possible that I've learned through the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't, okay? I tried once, what was it? It was like 5 months before I got sober. I tried once to stay sober on the hashish program. I lasted 9 days, okay? And I had a slip in the middle of those 9 days. Now, that's the type of alcoholic I was. And yet I found all of these people here in Alcoholics Anonymous, new friends like Bree, that invited me to share with you guys my experience, strength, and hope. My experience is that I was an alcoholic and I found Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm still an alcoholic, but I'm not a drunk one anymore. My strength comes from what I've learned in these rooms. That's the only strength I have. My hope is that tomorrow, if I do the things that I've been doing, I don't drink again tomorrow, and that my friends don't drink either, and that anybody that comes to this program can have what I have. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Gino. And finally, Trish, who I can't believe is here with us to speak. Please take it away.
Hi, I'm Trish, and I'm an addict. One of my addictions is alcohol. And I'm really, really glad to be with you tonight. I wanted to be there in person so bad. But Monday, actually it was Tuesday, I got tested positive for COVID. So here I am. And as a result of that, we have spent a grueling last week. Brianna is right in saying that because she's been by my side the whole way, either physically or spiritually, her along with our sponsor who has, I mean, they have both trafficked me back and forth with these horrible, horrible fitting masks that look like something from Red, what is that called? The Red Lagoon? Yeah, only they look really great on them. I wouldn't have wanted to wear one of those. First of all, my voice is not great. I want to open with this quote from the big book, because I wanted to keep it in the big book because I tend to go off on my own stuff. And so I want to keep it grounded because I wrote this presentation sick with COVID. And I may mention that a couple more times. So I wanted to make sure that some of it made sense. So on page 47 of the big book, it says, "When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean our own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions, which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was." I have, I was lucky when I came into this program because I already had a conception of God. And the problem I had was I was really pissed off at him. I blame God for every single thing that had happened bad in my life. And there was a lot. It was rape, it was beatings, violence. I lost my children. That was God's fault. Of course it was. I lost everything I cared about, mainly my children. God didn't have anything to do with any of those things. Those were results from my choices. Those were results from other people's choices. And so I had to learn to forgive God. It took a while, but I accomplished it. And I'm really grateful for that. I wanted to talk to you tonight about letting go and letting God. Now, we have a lot of these little cliches in AA that some of us really hate. I'm not one of those people. I love them. You know, like, let go, let God, keep coming back. It works if you work it. One is too many and a thousand never enough. I know that didn't come out great. Glad you're here. Life on life's terms. You can only keep it by giving it away, or you can only keep what you have by giving it away. 90 and 90, do the next right thing. These phrases get on other people's nerves, but I like them because I'm the kind of person that has to learn through repetition. It's difficult for me to hear something and grasp it the first time. I have to hear it over and over and over again. And these words that I just said, I can quote. I wrote that off the top of my head, by the way. Yay me, because they're part of my life. They're ingrained in my mind, along with a lot of other things that I've learned from my spiritual program. And I'm very grateful for all of those. My higher power actually saved me from the violence and the abuse. He saved me from loneliness as a child and as an adult. He saved me from my disease and got me into recovery. He saved me from a suicide attempt after a bottle of amitriptyline left me on life support. Because of my higher power, I'm not only no longer in abusive relationships, but I have friends and family. Gino was talking about lifelong friends. I see people who haven't seen each other in, 2 years, Tig? Close to that. Yeah. Love ya. I mean, who does that? You don't see somebody in 2 years, you walk by them in a sidewalk and don't recognize them, right? Yeah, here everybody has to name themselves, so it's kind of hard. So we get recognized. But anyway, every part of my life right now, I use towards recovery because recovery still comes first for me. It has throughout my whole time in recovery, and it's been a couple decades now. And I know I've done it because, number one, my higher power, and number two, because I put my recovery program first. I put it ahead of my family, my children. I put my recovery ahead of my paying bills. I put recovery ahead of my car. I put recovery ahead of everything because without recovery, I have none of those things. None of them. Without recovery, I lose my sobriety. Without my sobriety. So I have to keep myself grounded because I'm still an addict. I still suffer from the disease of addiction. And so I know that I'm not cured. It flares up all the time. You should see me shopping. Tig, you shouldn't have sat in front, honey. I'm going to pick on you all night long. We love to go thrift store shopping. And we met a couple, the last time we saw each other was thrift store shopping. That was so much fun. But I have to watch it because I'm addicted to shopping. It can get out of hand. I can spend money that maybe I shouldn't spend. So I have to be very careful. And I've learned ways to do that. There's three reasons why people have trouble with God when they come in from as a newcomers. First of all, they don't believe it. They don't believe in God. They think that's a big myth. Doesn't exist. Second, they're angry with God. Like I was blaming God for everything. Three, they don't inwardly believe that they're worthy of love from a power higher than themselves. I had just kind of struggled with that one too. Remember, I wrote this when I was sick. I'm going to apologize all the way through. Deal with it. My sponsor will criticize me for that afterwards. there are many things that I've trusted God with. First of all, my character defects, my living situation. I live in a home that I love. It's a mess, but I love it. It's my mess and it's comfortable for me. And I know it was a gift. I pay $145 a month. Did y'all hear that? I said $145 is my rent. Can't ask for better than that. But all my basic needs, I want for nothing. I have a freezer full of food. I have everything I need. I honestly cannot complain for the COVID part. He provides my food, my finances, my clothing. My automobile was given to me, a 2012 Ford Fusion was given to me 2 years ago by a couple in my church. So many things that I just don't deserve, that I have a full tank of gas. I get to see every doctor that I need. I get the medicine that I need. I have had to struggle with kidney failure for the past year, actually 2 years, but the past year has been real bad. And I have had to pray my kidneys up so that I wouldn't have to go into dialysis. And I was able to do that for a year before I finally did have to go into dialysis. And now dialysis is a gift. It's one of the best things that's ever happened to me. Last year, right after Thanksgiving, I was diagnosed with liver cancer. Liver cancer that was caused by my addictions, my relationship addiction, which caused my alcoholism, which caused the liver cancer, my relationship addiction, which caused hepatitis C, which caused the liver cancer, my relationship addiction, which caused my drug addiction, which caused liver cancer. So at 22 years sober, I get diagnosed with liver cancer. And liver cancer is kind of hard to beat. I'm really finding that out. So when I found out, it was like a sledgehammer, boom, right in the head. And I drove home. I pray a lot in the car. Okay. And so if y'all see me driving, and I'm doing this, you know, I'm carrying on, it's because I'm in prayer and God's driving. So I said to him, you know, you and I have been through a lot together, good and bad. This is another adventure and there's a battle involved and I'm tired. I can't fight this battle. You're going to have to fight it for me. You know, when I said that prayer, it was like the fear lifted. It was like the worry was gone. My attitude was lifted. When I talk about having liver cancer to people, they say, do you have a good attitude about this? And I say, that's because of my higher power. And he's the one that's fighting that battle. So because he's fighting this battle for me, liver cancer has become a gift. And I have had experiences and conversations and wonderful encounters with people that I never would have had if I hadn't had liver cancer. And so I'm grateful. My oldest daughter and I have never been closer. My two younger daughters, one gave me her Facebook page just before Christmas. It's been 22 years with no contact. She lets me see her Facebook page just before Christmas. Merry Christmas. And now I get to see my granddaughters, because she posts like 25 things a day. So I get to literally watch them as they grow. And I never dreamed I would have that opportunity. This morning, my next oldest daughter did the same thing. And so I've been spending the majority of my day looking at my three younger grandchildren, two of which I've never met. Liver cancer is a gift. And the reason that it's been a gift is because I was able to turn it over. I was able to surrender it to a power greater than myself. I was able to let go and let God. in doing so, gone is the fear, the resentment, anxiety, the worry and stress. Life still presents disagreements, upsets, and COVID. And sometimes I have to remind myself that I know somebody in the program giving a talk. I said this to Brianna 2 days ago. I know somebody in the program giving a talk on New Year's Eve about letting go and letting God. Maybe I might want to attend that meeting. I used to think I had the strength that could cause good things to happen, that I had the strength to prevent bad and hard things from happening, that I had the strength to make everything turn out okay. It didn't work too well for me. Now I have learned to plead with God to do only what he can do and then get out of the way and let him do it. I let God drive my car, especially in snowstorms. He seems to like that. I let God fight my battles. I let God take my fear and I let God heal my pain. I let God lead the way and provide for all my needs. And I let God grant me peace that tears in my eyes now. My higher power is something that has got me right here, right where I am right now. Your higher powers have done the same for you. You look around and see where you're at and who you're by. Your higher power has something to do with that. Many of us, if we think back, we know that it wasn't us that brought us into this program. If it was left up to me, I'd still be out there. Only I wouldn't be. I'd be dead long ago. And so I'm grateful that my higher power took over and got me where I needed to be. And, you know, I've been through a lot. And I used to ask God, why? You know, why me? Why am I having to do this? Why did this happen? Why did he do that to me? Why did you take my kids away? In recovery, all my whys have been answered. Because if I look back, and it may take a week someday, I'm going to find out why I had COVID right now, tonight. Someday, I know I'm going to find that out. Life keeps happening, even when we're sober. Those of you who are new, you're going to find that out. Sickness happens. There's that COVID thing again. Waiting on test results and delays. When you think, I cannot handle another delay, and the doctor calls and says, we need to talk to a cardiologist before we can put you on the transplant list. It's been a year going through radiation. And I'm not talking radiation when they stick the thing out here and zap you and then leave. I'm talking where they go inside you, up in your artery, into the liver, up to the cancer, and zap it point blank. That kind of radiation. Where you have to wait 2 months before you can have an MRI that will show whether or not the radiation did any good. I've never been a good waiter. And I must say, I'm still maybe not the best one. Car trouble happens in recovery. Anybody had car trouble in recovery? Yeah. Family drama. Anybody? I know just this side of the room's getting picked on here. Family drama. How about relationships? You make them, you break them, right? Yeah, that's why they sort of suggest strongly to stay out of a relationship the first year in recovery. Weather happens. You know, we get bogged down by 18 inches of snow. In many places, it's way more than that. Your job happens. And maybe it's a boss that if he says one more word to you, you're going to let him have it. Okay. Death happens. Our loved ones pass. Brothers and sisters in the program relapse and pass. Life happens. It's a bumpy ride. And the way I have found, and what works for many of us, is if we have that higher power that can take over some of that stuff, the ride's a little smoother if we can just hang on with both hands and not try to have the other hand controlling everything. what if I didn't have to take care of this? What if it wasn't up to me? I think this is a good example for what they say, act as if, let go. I'm like, God, and see what happens. Surrender is an act of faith. It's an act of trust. It's, I don't see a heart yet. I'm doing good. It's an act. It's a belief in a power greater than you. It takes learning to trust, relaxing control, releasing control, surrendering control. Daily reflections. I love this book. Can everybody see this book? It's okay. It's not an outside issue. It's my daily reflections. My daily reflections has been with me for 22 years. I love this book, not only because it's a daily devotion, but because in the back, it has an index where you can look up things that are that you're dealing with and read pages on that subject. And so I looked up surrender. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I got COVID. I can't count straight. 8 pages in the daily reflections on surrender. So I decided I was going to read them all. So, and find some quotes to tell you. Okay, so I got to 2 of them, and the second one just said it all. And that's on page 40 of the Daily Reflections. It's called, it's February 1st, by the way. I've got COVID, I don't know what today is. Goal Sanity. Step 2 gently and very gradually began to infiltrate my life. I can't say upon what occasion or upon what day I came to believe in a power greater than myself. And I certainly have that belief now. That's from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 27. Came to believe. I gave lip service to my belief when I felt like it or when I thought it would look good. I didn't really trust God. I didn't believe he cared for me. I kept trying to change things I couldn't change. I kept trying to change things I couldn't change. Wow. Gradually, in disgust, I began to turn it all over, saying, you're so omnipotent, you take care of it. He did. I began to receive answers to my deepest problems. Sometimes at the most unusual times, driving to work, eating lunch, or when I was sound asleep, I realized that I hadn't thought of those solutions. A power greater than myself had given them to me. I came to believe. I strongly encourage you to read the chapter in the big book called We Agnostics. I had to look it up. I have COVID. I couldn't remember We Agnostics. I would recommend that chapter to you if you have any problem finding or describing a power greater than yourself, because it's possible. It's rarely possible to do this program without one, but it's not very probable. And I strongly recommend against doing that. Thank you all for coming. You know, thank you for hosting this Three Forks and the Moscow Friday night. Thank you very much for having this for New Year's Eve. Happy New Year, buddy.
And thank you, Bree, for inviting me back to one of my favorite meetings.
Yes.
Congratulations to the newcomers. Happy anniversary to the anniversaries. Hopefully everybody hears something that ruins their drinking. Thanks for letting me be a service.
Welcome to the folks from El Dorado Hills, too.
Thank you. Thanks, Gino.
Welcome to my sister. I see my sister's here.
Being beat up and battered around. Being sent up and I've been shut down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Reputations changeable. situation's tolerable. But baby, you're adorable, and you'll need me with care. I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care?
Everybody's got somebody to lean on. Put your body next to mine and dream on.
I've been fucked up and I've been fooled. I've been loved and ridiculed in daycare centers and night schools. Airports terrorized, sent to meetings hypnotized, overexposed, commercialized, and only with care. I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care?
Everybody got somebody to lean on. Put your body next to mine and dream on.
I've been uptight and made a mess, but I'll clean it up myself, I guess. Oh, the sweet smell of success.